Welcome to Miracle Nutrition with Hardy White. I'm Hardy White. Join me now as we dream together, and as we dream together, we journey into the sea of ideas. And once we're there, we can take whatever we want. Oh, it's a bounty. It's a bounty. There's no mutiny, just mutuality. It's a mutual bounty. And you, my friend, are my friend. Well, hello, my friends. I want to answer some questions for you today. Well, one question in particular. I'm often asked, Hardy, where do you get your ideas? Oh my gosh, they just come to me. But I'll try to explain to you what I think, how you go looking for or getting ideas. Now, sometimes I have very loose ideas for the show, like it should be about conjunctions. So I'll start reading about and or but. But then other times I'll think about, well, maybe it should be about, you know, something more specific. Like the Ed Norton character on The Honeymooners. Like, do a deep dive. Or it could be just, my idea is going to be a song. Or I'll do a poem will be my idea. So that's the way I could. Hey, guys, what are you doing?
Oh, we're just watching MASH. We like to check in with the good old 0077.
Well, could you do it another time? I'm broadcasting.
I suppose so.
All right. Oh, the TV's always on. They've got the TV on all the time. That's wonderful. And I love to hear and listen and watch the ideas of the dead. And that's what a lot of the shows are. But there's modern shows you can see. What are people thinking now? What kind of ideas do they have now? But I like to look at the ideas of the dead. And mainly it's because they're not using them. It's just like going through people's wardrobes after they've died, you know. I say die, I say it like it's a bad thing. It happens to all of us. There's something you can, we don't even all poop, but we all die. And so I'm telling you, you can go through and it's basically just recycling. Sometimes you can even wear the dead. I don't do that, but people have done that. And not in a lot of with humans, mainly with animals and things. So I'm going to wear the carcass of a bear, you might say. And or I'm going to wear my high school principal who just died recently. That, not so much. And I'm not even sure that he would keep you very warm. Bless your heart. You know, I'm wearing Mr. Herbert. His name wasn't Herbert. That's just what we called him, Herbert. I know it sounds like Humbert, but it's not. It was different, and it's a different inside joke. My goodness. There's so many, we always say, use your inside joke like that when we're joking too much about things that other people will get. Now, time has taken care of that for me a lot, where I something that was an obvious sort of pop culture joke is now, well, it's first of all, it went through a period of being an obscure reference, and now it's a surreal non sequitur. And that's a lovely thing. I used to see that with, my ancestors. Well, I guess, you know, my grandparents' generation and all. So, you know, you can go from everybody knowing what, you know, silence is foo means to nobody knowing. Isn't that, you want to buy a duck? I don't. But I do want to, well, you know what? I'll tell you what, I think I want to play a little bit of piano for you. I love Joni, and I love Chachi, and Joni, she loves me too. I love Joni, loves Joni and Chachi.
Hey, I'm sorry to interrupt you, but I was wondering, could I play something on the piano?
Well, Sure, I just literally just sat down to play, but yeah, just you come and just play something.
All right, great. Listen.
Well, play the rest of it.
There is no rest of it. I haven't written it yet.
Written it? You didn't write that. That's the end theme to All in the Family. Roger Calloway wrote that.
No. It's a song I'm writing that came to me in a dream. It's called Jesus Here There.
It really isn't. What I think happened to you is you fell asleep with the TV on a classic TV show station and then incorporated it into a dream in a hypnagogic state.
Wow. I guess that could be. No way to know.
Of course there is. I can use the time machine to create a hypnagogic idea analyzer. You simply fall asleep with the TV on, and we record what you half dream, half hear.
Well, it's worth a shot.
It really isn't, but let's fill our time before death with utter pointlessness as a protest. Now just relax and try to fall asleep as I put the TV on.
All right.
Go on, will you, meathead?
All in the Family was recorded on tape before a live audience.
Jesus Here There was filmed in front of a live audience.
I take a little pill, it's for my disease. If you've got a disease, consult with your doctor about taking a pill. Your doctor may inform you that the pill may kill you. He'll tell you all the things the pill can do. The pill may work out for you, and you may get rid of your disease, and the symptoms may abate. For severe and advanced forms of the pill, you might take the pill.
I like to take a pill when I have a
taking my medicine. Take a little pill for the disease I have. My pill is controlling my disease symptoms now.
Take a little pill. Old white man, doesn't have a plan, shooting at the soil, here comes oil, oil gets your cash, get zips fast, move to California, ooh!
Hillbillies everywhere!
Come back again, like you did before. Come back again, waving at the door. Who's here now? Come back again.
Your car's gonna break down. You're gonna have to pay, but you don't have to pay. You don't have to pay when your car breaks down. You gotta pay money.
My car broke down. It broke. I didn't have to pay. They paid. My car broke down. I didn't have to pay money. They paid. Make them pay. They pay money. My car broke down.
Your car's gonna break down. When that car breaks down, you have to pay money. It's money.
The car broke down. That was money. It was money I needed. Car broke down, they paid.
Car's gonna break down. When cars break down.
If they break down, you pay. They pay. Don't pay. Money pays.
Legs and feet have to move. They must have movement. There needs to be movement in legs and feet. Therefore, if you don't move your legs and feet, something has to.
I need my legs and feet to move. They needed movement. This moved my legs and feet. Legs and feet have to move.
This moves them. Regain movement in legs and feet by moving legs and feet. Feet and legs.
I think it really moves them. It moves legs and feet. It moves them, and my legs and feet move.
I feel movement. I feel legs and feet. It really is moving my legs and feet.
Get movement. Get legs and feet movement. Move your legs and feet like never before. Act now and move your legs and feet faster, better, stronger.
And heroes.
Sheriff. Bam. Oh. Bam. Shum. Andy.
You know when it's tough, rough country rough. When that rough country rough tough country, well, tough enough tough country. Same thing, Ronald Roll Ragatine. Raggedy old red shine, that's the country tough, that's the man tough. Yeah, we know it's the only tough. You know it, they know it. Country tough know it, Dave. Brother Raggedy.
Bonanza Frontier. Bonanza. Bonanza Frontier. Got right, Bonanza Frontier, Hoss. Got right. Bonanza. Bonanza.
Pa!
Gunfire.
Pa!
Gunfire, Bonanza. Got right.
Pa!
Bonanza, gunfire, Hoss.
The dream world, eh? What goes on there?
That's where you hear and process others' ideas and then mistake them for your own.
Oh, no. How many times have I done that?
All the times.
All the times? Everything I've ever thought that was an original idea is actually something that I heard or saw and then processed in my sleep and thought it came to me?
Yes.
Oh, no. These are the stealing fields.
Yes.
Well, this is something else. I guess all the time I thought I was composing.
But you were really decomposing.
Oh my gosh, I just dreamed the greatest joke. I can't wait to wake up and tell everybody. Ugh, that was the weirdest dream. Hey everybody, I've got good news and bad news. The good news is I'm decomposing. And the bad news is, there are no original ideas.
There are no original ideas. Oh my goodness, I didn't come up with that. It's not an original idea. I took the idea from that famous book, There Are No Original Ideas, a survey of There Are No Original Idea Treaties Through History. And treatises, I guess, how do you pronounce it? But it's almost its own genre. And we know there's no original ones, but
That's a kind of chicken and the egg situation, isn't it? What's chicken and the egg situation? There was a restaurant in Atlanta called Chicken and the Egg. And there was another one across town called Egg and Chicken. And there was a big, just like the Pat and Mike's or whatever, Philly cheesesteak. It wasn't clear who came first. And this is one of those situations where who knows whether the original idea came first or the copy of the original idea, or whether it's a big cycle and there's just one idea and it's stuck in a sort of toilet bowl spiral. And that is all in a black hole. I'm in a black hole, maybe. Maybe you are too. It doesn't matter, does it? And you could be in a lot of different things. And ultimately, we're all in Jack's house because he had a sack and the cat ate it. That is an example of recursive literature. That's one of those things. The other is I had a goat who ate something my father bought for tuzism. I wonder how much that tuzism goat is worth now. It's funny. I'd like to look that up. You know, and now it's like probably hundreds of thousands of zism. But I do not know. I am not, I don't know what they call it, inflationary scientist or economist or one of those. I'm not pretending to be stupid. That's as discouraging for me. Bless you. You're listening to me. And so we're all in this together, basically. I would say that if I was a pilot or something, I'd say, hello, this is your captain speaking. And, you know, I've got mixed feelings because I'm excited to be your captain, but I'm really bad at this. But we're all in this together. On the one hand, there's like three or four different hands. And two of them belong to my co-pilot who has passed out in some kind of stupor. He's hunched over like he had some bad drugs. Bless all of us, and I'll see you on the other side. I wonder if the people say that as a greeting, something, I'll see you on the other side. And I think it comes from theater. And because you're supposed to exit, I get confused. Say stage, your other stage right. Someone's always yelling at me. I don't know. Is it facing? Is it looking? I'm very confused in the world of selfie photography with a mirror image that you're looking at. So it's very, you know, is that my left hand that I'm picking my nose with? Or my right? I thought I was right-handed. And you realize, oh, I was taking a selfie of me. Why was I doing that? I must have done that by mistake. Oh, bless me. Now it's my passport photo. Oh, the world works so quickly now. And now, oops, I've just mailed it to all my friends. And there's probably things that do that automatically. You know, I think you're taking a private picture and say, oh, now all your friends have just been alerted. And you go, no, I was just seeing what that thing on my butt was because I can't use a mirror. And it turns out I think it's nothing. What happened is I sat on the funny papers and my butt was just the right moisture to be like Silly Putty. And I stood up and there was Dondi or one of them. I don't even know who's in the funny papers anymore. But they still don't know how to get the ink to stick to the newspaper. Here it is. I don't want to say the year so that they can rerun my show. And a lot of people would make that mistake in the past. Say, oh, it's great. It's 1984. Now you can't play the show again. I remember reading that all of the I Love Lucy episodes were in reruns except for one crucial episode. The Christmas episode. And it was obviously not in reruns because it was the one not evergreen episode. And it's so fun. It's a misnomer because evergreens do fine in the winter, don't they? Aren't they evergreen? And they're in the winter, too. And where would they be a lot of? Well, in your living room at Christmas, so I don't even get it. But I believe that was a show also, the I Love Lucy Christmas special. I've discussed this many times because obviously I was super affected by the news. Was done without an audience. And so there was no... that. And, you know, that all American sitcoms had to have that because... I guess they feared we don't know where the jokes are. And I suppose that's why they do it. Now, sometimes there's studio audiences, but the laughs you're hearing aren't the laughs that joke got. They've been sweetened. is what they call it. But sometimes they weren't there at all. For instance, I've been to, if you've ever been to a taping of a TV show, let's say you do the scene and you go, oh, you know, Madeline Kahn got a laugh on that, but then, you know, Cosby blew his line or something. So they do it again. About the third time, everyone's heard the joke. So if that's the take, they got to grab that audience laughter from the first one, you know? Now, sometimes they'll sweeten it with the laughter of the long dead. And you'll go, man, that sounds, I don't know who was laughing, but they also laughed at good times. Because that, you know, that's an old whoop. That's a classic old 70s whoop or something that got in there. And that's fascinating. So you're taking your cues, a sort of contagious laughter from the dead. And that's what happens when you watch these old sitcoms, too, you know. I'm laughing right along. What are you all laughing at?
Nothing any longer. We are dead. We are among the dead.
Oh, I'm sorry. You know how contagious laughter is, even if it's done by zombies. And there's nothing more zombie than the television, because it's bringing us stuff that's long gone. And I look at it like that. It's just, there's some things, especially like if there's a, if I'm watching like a 60s TV show and they show like a can of corn, I always think, God, that's, that particularly is long gone. When one of the cans gone, the corn's gone. It was gone soon after that, probably. Unless it's a prop can. I don't know what's in anything. But whenever I see food sort of on screen from that long ago, or a dog, or dog food, I think, man, they're, you know, they really haven't been here in a long time. Now, when you watch MASH, you go, oh, I know Alan Alda's alive. I'm making quotes. No, he is alive. He's alive, and he's doing stuff, I think. He's been in things. And I don't just mean the general preposition way. I'm in a chair. He's been in productions more than I can say. Oh, my goodness. I haven't been in. Here's a list of things that that he and I don't have in common. I wasn't in MASH. I don't think. No, there's no way I would have been. I mean, you know how some stuff that happens to you real young, you might not recall. And I would have been very young when that happened. And I don't think so, though. I don't think I was on. And I think my mother would have told me, hey, here's some family lore. You were on a MASH. What? Yes, it was an episode where Hawkeye adopts a little boy who wanders into the camp. Because how did he get there? He was then. I don't know, but they set it up great. And then he's got, you know, you've got to go home to Wisconsin or whatever. And they send him back. But then once he gets home, it turns out he's from very rich people. And her father sends the heart monitor that they need in Korea for the Korean War hearts to casualties. Not the casualties who die. Well, those two. I don't really know the terminology. It's so complicated. My goodness. And it's so different than the Korea of today, I imagine. I wonder if they had alpaca world then. Then you could go, because that's they do now. You can go and just hundreds of alpacas will come marching down a hill after you call them to some majestic military music. And the beautiful little silly faces that are just made for Instagram greet you. And you can put little nubbets in their mouth and stuff like that. Now, I don't know. I think they would have done that where Radar gets, you know, I'm going to Sopaka. I don't know how he talks. Going to Sopaka or whatever. They were all such good characters and memorable. Now, the thing I didn't care for was the cartoon MASH Babies. And that was like, you know, baby Hawkeye, you better get. It was creep. The baby Hot Lips creeped me out so badly and did a lot of people. And that was short-lived. But there was a craze there for a while where somebody in show business figured out that people used to be babies. And then there was they were talking about prequels or whatever, and they, you know, people used to be babies. And babies are silly and fun. And they thought, well, we can just take them and make it. The baby, 12 Angry Babies, was a great success where we just had that. You know, and you can do it with anything. And, but, you know, it runs its course. It's like the hillbilly stuff with the Beverly Hillbillies. Now, I just watched one the other day where they're in Silver Dollar City, and that's meta, because Silver Dollar City, as far as from my understanding is, was the inspiration for doing the show. That the guy who created the show visited there, was like, this is great. These people are ridiculous, and thought, you know, I'd love to see. What if they could see, you know, real true sophistication. True sophistication. And then that idea spawned, you know, the Beverly Hillbillies. Imagine if instead of Silver Dollar City, he had gone, what's his name, Jennings or Jet? He had gone to Coney Island, and it might have gone something like this. It didn't, though. And so the Clampets were visiting this place that was where they came from. It's very bizarre. It's almost like, I don't know. Wasn't there like a Red Dwarf where the characters came into the real world and visited the people who created the characters? I don't know. It was kind of like that, though. And please don't do that if you didn't already. Red Dwarf Babies was not good either, because I don't know. Babies don't eat curry a lot. Well, some do. I mean, a whole continent does. But I mean, I don't know. But the one fella liked the really hot vindaloo. And I just wonder that certain babies' palates, whether that's, I'm speaking out of ignorance, obviously. Boy, I tell you, I pray every day when I should be studying that I will be delivered from my ignorance. And nothing's happened so far, but I believe that. And no, I do things actively about it. I learn more things, but it is really, it's like saying, you know, you need more stock in your larder. Beg your pardon. You need more cans of soup in your pantry. And I said, well, I can do that. But to do that, I have to get rid of some previous cans of soup. And that is the way with information with me. As I love to learn things, I am forgetting at a similar rate. I wonder if you could do the math for what the rate is. And the rate for what? I don't know. Sometimes the in and the exit are right close to one another. So I learn a piece of information and off it goes. You know how like some species, the babies don't have to stick around for very long. They hit the ground. I'm ready to be an independent cockroach or whatever. And you go, not me. I'm a baby elephant. I need to be coddled for a very long time because I also have a very long gestation period. And then once I'm born, I'm very timid and infantile. I will take care of you, baby elephant. Come with me. Thank you, big elephant. I don't know. I got very Jungle Book when that baby elephants go by and the elephants go by, I would weep. And I don't know why. I was just, when I was a kid, if there was elephants in anything, I don't know if it was from Dumbo or had it before, but I see elephants and I just start, weeping. I think out of just guilt for humanity or I don't really know. I don't remember. Maybe, you know, I remember something about before I was born and, mainly, if I would, it would have been amniotic fluid. Would have been in there, at least between my memories, previous ones and the ones now. There would have been that literal gestation period. And then I don't remember. But I don't think I had my memory box, what I call my brain yet, wasn't formed. But you wonder about the soul. I'm glad there's entire institutions devoted to thinking about things like that. What is the human soul? We don't know, and that's why it's good that there's research labs that are looking into it. But I'll tell you, I know some things in my heart. How do you do that? How do you know things, Hardy, that other people can't prove, even scientists, yet you know and you say you know them true? Because I have mastered self-delusion. And that is like, no one can lie to you like you. And that is what a wonderful gift. And you can just say, you know, no, I'm denying reality completely. And even if you receive the ultimate punishment for your hubris, you might not know what happened. So I don't know. In a way, I do wish that there is an afterlife so people can experience some residual regret. Say, okay, I see now. Oh, was I an idiot? That's all really the universe wants from you is a little mea culpa. At the end, go, okay, you were right. I was wrong. I met my demise. And then I feel like, so you can go now. It's just I needed to take you down a peg. Well, you took me off the whole board that had pegs on it, but okay. I am now humbled. To be truly humbled, must you let go of everything? Let go of your ego completely. Yeah, I don't know. I've not been. Here's how I've short-circuited it a little bit. I have been able to humble myself without letting go of my ego. And the way I've done that is I've taken my ego and I've bedazzled it. And I am using cringe to deliver me from any real credit or adulation or anything like that. You see what I'm saying? So I can't quite let go of my ego. I'm attached to it. But I can certainly use my psychic rhinestone and stud setter to make some beautiful pattern, some geometric, to make the Twin Peaks owl cave symbol on the back of my soul denim jacket. And I'd like to do that. And then you look and say, what a personality, that guy, ugh. And that rejection is actually very good for me, psychically and spiritually, because I am, at the same time, I'm okay. I love and accept myself, and the ultimate reward is complete and utter rejection by others. No, I'm kidding. Everything, most of what I say, I'm just being silly. When are you being sarcastic? I lose track. That's a problem. But I'm going to get on top of that, and I'm going to figure out when I mean things and when I don't. I'm looking into it. I'm trying to get, I think there's some ways that you can use like almost like lie detector things where they use the skin, the Galvanic skin response, there's something that you can put up, you hold it between your butt cheeks and it's got a wire on it. And I did this in dang old Times Square. They got me to do this, but it didn't read out anything. But, and then, you know, I don't know how things work. In a radio station, this is problematic because sometimes they leave you alone with it. And that used to terrify me when I would do radio live. I still do radio live, but more infrequently. I'd record a lot now since the accident. What accident? Not being close to a radio station that will have me. And so now I just record. But when you go there, it's like taking a shift on a ferry boat, you know, and like you're crossing the Hudson every day. It's your turn to cross the Hudson. You go, all right, gosh, you know, I guess just undocking, docking is the problem. Just get across there and we're good. And usually everything goes fine. But the problem is that you're the sole person at the helm. So when it doesn't, there you go. You have an entire floating radio station, and that's terrifying. Maybe it's more than just a ferry going across the river. Maybe it's more like a big one of those tankers, that the one that got stuck. Remember the one that got stuck sideways, the Greenways or something it was called, and it got stuck like Mike Myers in the movie where he can't get his golf cart out of the hall. That was a funny one. But it's not so funny when it happens with your cargo ship. Hi, I'm Hardy White. Don't pilot things. Don't be a pilot. If you're a pilot now, stay a pilot. It's okay. And just try to get to the end of your piloting. But if you're thinking about being a pilot or running a thing or being a conductor or engineer or something, don't do it. Don't be the sole person in that. Well, they'll just automate everything. Fine. Let them throw the computer in the melty pit. Don't you, otherwise they'll do it to you. That's the way. Those captains are just there for blame purposes. Because it doesn't have to be one person.
There's one person making all the calls.
Why?
So they'll...
Oh, blame. Yes, exactly. So it could really be done as a collective, you know, but somebody's captain has to go down with the ship. Otherwise, you can't really put something to rest until you come up with a reason. And since there are no reasons, you have to make one up. And then we're able to say, now I accept what happened because I've got a great story. And history is like that. It's wonderful. It feels all wrapped up sometimes, doesn't it? So, well, we got the story of that. No, it's a shoreline paradox. There's so much more story. You can't run out of it. It isn't like fuel or rocks. You know, there's an infinite amount of it. The rocks might be infinite if you just keep breaking them up. But I think eventually, just mathematically, they go away. Oh, you know what won't go away mathematically? Me? I will. You do the math. I've been around now. How long have you been on this radio station? My goodness. I remember I came in off the... how'd you get... Tell us a story. Because you said there's no original ideas. Yeah, well, I was delivering chicken to the station. And Ken said, here, hold this. And it was a microphone. And I didn't know what to... I said, hello. I didn't know what I was doing. But then I don't know what I said, whether I told a joke or something. And the phone started ringing. All those 150 phones at the radio station, they all went off at once. And they say, who is this? This is great. This is the greatest. Is this a record? And they said, no, it's this fellow that was just delivering chicken. And then it just took off from there. And then it was that early Hardy White T-shirt craze where everybody had the shirts and they'd be, well, hello, and everything. You'd see that turn up in television and music and everything. And then, you know, it kept going. And then the bread, and it's just been a fantastic ride. I watched the Pee Wee Herman documentary, and I remember him. Oh, I remember. You know what I really remember is going to a movie theater to see that first movie. And the fellow that would take the tickets at the movie was this older retired guy, but he still had this ticket taker job, ticket, because he wanted to, you know, stay out. He was a friendly fella, and he wanted to visit with people. But he was a local color, you know, as they say. He was a character. And so he'd comment on everything. And he'd say, well, how are you doing today? That's like, how are you all doing? That kind of voice. And I remember I came in and I handed him my Pee Wee ticket. And he goes, oh, Pee Wee, yeah, he's a strange one. Like that. That's all he said. And I thought, well, who can debate that? So I liked it, you know. I didn't want to tell him, like, I'm a huge fan, actually. I'm really looking forward to this. All right, bless your heart. But, and I thought, I wonder if they'll ever say that about me. Say, that Hardy White, this fella's dead. And I remember when I started in radio, I thought, I'm going to sound a little like him. So even if my own voice doesn't sound exactly like that guy, I'm going to add some of that. He's as hard as a strange one. I'm going to add some of his voice in me. And that's a way of just stealing from people, and they never know. That's a lovely thing to do. I would have said artist friends would go to cafes. I don't know how acceptable this is still. People do it on the subway, too. And sketch people. Sketch other people. And I think today that might... I don't know. People are really touchy. You know, what are you going to use it for? You know, what do you... I don't know. Hack your bank account with this pencil sketch of you... napping. No, I don't really know if it's, but they would do like sketches of somebody. Now my problem is that if it's a caricature, look out, make sure the person doesn't see it. And I've seen that before. You ever looked over and say, oh, damn it, that person just drew me on a napkin and I look like Burt Mustin. So, you know, you don't want to, you know, that's art is wrong. Art is bad and wrong. And it's all just stealing things, stealing other images. Hardy's being silly. I am. But I don't want to say, art is neutral, as we know. Everything is really neutral. But when people say stuff like that, you know, learning is great. Learning what? You know, there's, you can learn some abominable things. You know, art is great. You know, it really, everything really depends. It's wonderful. It's an interdependent universe. It's hard to make blanket statements. And our wonderfully vague language ensures that. Well, it's not really vague. It's very precise. But there's some vagueness at the edges that are nice. We have some words that are inclusive, like crazy. And we use those like art or the word genius. I think we're all in there somewhere. Somewhere, you know, everybody has somebody who thinks they're a genius, even if it's sarcastic. Well, aren't you a genius? I think that counts. You go, maybe, you know. I can't. Sometimes I don't know when I'm being sarcastic. Maybe this guy doesn't either. And aren't you attractive? Yeah. I guess. Never thought about it. So I believe others. I don't believe others. I guess it all just depends. There it is again. Oh, my goodness. A lot of the idea for the show I got today, this is very dangerous, and I wouldn't do this, is I fell asleep listening to my own show. And when I fell asleep listening to my own show, I started to copy myself. And I don't know if you've ever seen works of art that are, there's a famous recording that's a, you know, recording of an empty room, that kind of thing. And there's a, you know, copies of copies of copies of copies of copies of copies of copies, like Fast and Furious. And there's all sorts of art that uses this as a technique because there's a deterioration over time. It becomes less like the original thing because flaws are amplified in the same way that, you know, evolution sort of introduces different things in there. Not, I almost said aberrations, but they are. And strange things happen and there's mutations, and the mutations are what introduces originality. So the thing is, I go to copy a thing. I think I'm copying it, but I get it a little bit wrong. And in getting it wrong, I make something a little bit different, just different enough that it might give you a different feeling altogether. It might be an entirely different thing, just because I got it wrong. For instance, Dr. Katz and the swiggly, squiggly drawings of him. So there you go. Like, I think those that old cartoon got more famous than the comedian himself, whose face wasn't doing all that. It may be now. He may be older. But it wasn't doing all the shaking and squiggling like that. That was an artistic technique. That was getting it a little bit wrong and it looking right. So I've always thought, well, if sort of mutating something, getting a little bit of wrong makes it original, well, I will take things, influences, television, other radio, and I will get them profoundly wrong. Like, so just completely, utterly wrong. Just do it wrong. And then maybe, just maybe, I'll get genius. You never know. It's like if I take salt and sand and water and urine and heat it in a pan, I might get a cake. You don't know. You don't know. No one knows, really. It's all just a lot. There's a lot of chance. And some things, yes, granted, you can plan for. And that's why there are good shows, so-called good shows, like mostly on streaming or whatever you call it. But there's millions and millions of dollars. To make those shows, we have to, there's individuals worldwide that have to sacrifice their lives and their, you know, and food and things. But the good thing is that we can make these shows. They're shows. The shows we're making. I'm making a show now. It's wonderful to make and shows and to participate in them and to show them and acting and making. And showing, isn't it lovely? I'll tell you what, the movies now, movies and making and listening are just, they cannot be topped. And sure, there's other things in life. But how sweet are they without the ultimate sweetener of titillation or, you know, intrigue or something like that that you can mainly only get from really good quality films. You know, I can sit there and make rice all day long. But what am I really satisfying my deep need to be God? I don't know. All these questions are questions that I learned in art school. I call it art school, but it's really just television. I've watched it religiously and academically since I was very young. I didn't know that's what I was doing, but I was taking basically a graduate course in historical television when I was like six. Because a lot of times I was watching things that aren't really available to even be watched, and I was watching them in context. So let's say I was in, maybe I was in New Jersey watching the Sally Stars Philadelphia Popeye Theater, you know. And so I'm watching the same Popeyes as everybody else, but now I get to see Sally Star. Now, I don't know how much footage is, you know. A lot of that was directly broadcast, and I don't know whether there's kinescopes of it or sketches. But yeah, I think that constitutes, yeah, I think I have, yeah, yeah, multiple PhDs, I would say, in popular culture. I think you're buffing yourself up a little bit. I know you're a modest person, Hardy. You're just being silly. I am. Oh, my goodness. I'm trying to help you romanticize your life a little bit. You're too hard on yourself, I think. Your standards are unrealistic. You want to accomplish things in a world that's as absurd as you think it is, and as unfair and strange and uncontrollable as you think it is. But like somewhere in your heart, you think, well, maybe I really need to be. Am I being great? Oh, you're being alive, which I think is greater than great. You can be great and be dead. Alexander. Who's another great that's dead? The great Tempoli. Belzoni, great Belzoni. He's gone. I've talked extensively about great Belzoni, the circus giant who stole artifacts from Egypt for the BM. The BM, the British Museum. That's what they call it now. But you know, originally it was called the Bow Movement. Because it looked like that. You know, just like there's that big golden turd in Tokyo. And you go, oh, no, that's like Asahi beer or something. Well, this is like, oh, you know, this museum. They've changed it now. It looks like a museum. But when it was built, it looked like a poo. And so that's why they called it that. When I was coming up, I think my grandparents might have used their, at least my grandmother, who wasn't a nurse, would say BM, you know, for that kind of pottying. Also, number two, which I think it's, I mean, I know everybody names those functions and everything, one and two, but there's a primacy to the defecating, I think. You're talking too much about, listen, let me tell you something about this show and my career on radio. I started day one talking about colons, all right? So I'm just doing, this is my roots. Colons are my roots. So some trees have roots that go into the ground. I have colons that just go in there, tunnel in the ground. It's lovely. And they what do? They process. I'm like, I got to read up. But I know they do that. And it's so funny. I'm also interested in cologne or fragrances. And it's spelled so similarly. And just any kind of smells, good or bad, in the world intrigue me. I like my senses, and not everybody has all of them, and they don't have to. And the ultimate sense, what's the ultimate sense? Nonsense. Journey now with me to a world of nonsense. Not everything has to be logical. Not everything has to be mature and grown up. Not at all. Especially if you've got a job like you're a surgeon or air traffic controller. Just tomorrow when you go to work, just say, I'm not, just talk like a baby the whole time. And it's just a way of like pushing back a little bit and say, is all this as serious as we take it, as you know, as we make it out to be? I don't know. I've felt that way in the past on the radio. Say, Hardy, you don't be frivolous on there. Let people know. Well, I do. I do let people know they're loved. I let people know through my own struggles that life is a struggle, and I understand. But I also realize that all I can really do is acknowledge, and that takes about 2 seconds. And then I've got almost a whole hour then. So after I say, oh, my beautiful human beings, I understand the struggle. It's a life and death one, literally. And the thing they don't mention is the pain, because it's a pain, no pain struggle. And that isn't as permanent and black and white as death. That's a grayness that goes on your whole life, and it can be a mental pain that you deal with, physical pain, all sorts of things that keep you from enjoying your life. And every day they want to sell you something and some solution to make you feel like you have some kind of shortcoming or you're responsible somehow for this pain. Life is responsible for the pain. It usually is, by and large, 99%. You know, and that 1% also it's responsible for, but I don't want people to think that I don't believe in free will. So bless you. And I just put a warm embrace around you. Whoever you are, you deserve that kind of love. I'm going to hug you like an old grandpa. Say, I appreciate you and I love you just because you're surviving this struggle. And who knows what it takes? Who knows what the path is? But those who do it with love and an open heart, I know that feels differently. And so I encourage you to find your courage to face it with love and an open heart, and not to add to others' pain. And you'll find like-minded people who will nurture you when you need it, and you can do that in return. And I believe that this show is a part of a wonderful reciprocal relationship that we're engaged in, where I come on the radio and I fill up an hour that needs to be legally filled up for the radio station, and also other DJs can't do everything. And in return for that, you allow me to just sort of like get it all out. Is it all out yet? No, there's more. That's been my whole career. You know, are you done? No, there's gonna be more. Oh, bless your heart. Let me hold your hair while you pontificate. I shall. Oh, I'm not done speaking to you. I will speak until I'm not capable to anymore. And I realized from a couple documentaries, people can do that until like the day of their death. So I'm probably not going to do that. So this was Hardy recorded this just hours before he died. Oh, God, Jesus, help me. I'm terrified. That's all it would be, just screaming. But no, I probably don't. Here's my final message in wisdom. I don't think so. I feel like wisdom is for the living, and then I'm just going to go out the way I came in, which is just screaming in utter terror. So I wonder what's up with this. You know, I was fine 2 seconds ago. Why is the universe disturbing me so? Oh, bless you. Anyone need another hug? I'm right here for you. I'm your friend, and unless you're and mean me harm, and then I'm going to look over there. Pew, I'm out of here. You are listening to Miracle Nutrition with Hardy White on WFMU East Orange, WMFU Mount Hope, 91.9 in Rockland County, and online worldwide, WFMU.org. And did I say Rockland County and all that? I don't know. Should I start over again? You are listening to Miracle Nutrition on WFMU East Orange, WMFU Mount Hope, 91.9 in New York City, in Rockland County, and online, WFMU.org. Yes, I think I skipped the New York City, Rockland County thing. Oh, bless me. Oh, it's so hard. I love you so much. I'm going to see you again next week.
Twin's name was Ebony. Her name was Mahogany. 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 Twin's name was Ebony.